You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
And Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We have an action-packed show today, and for some of our friends who cannot tune in on the radio, we can be heard online at WWBC. Just hit that little button that says On Demand, and Ellen will tell our friends who are tuning in today how to get to our show and how to download it and where to find the past shows as well.
You can find all of the past shows on SitaMediaInc.com, and all of the shows, that, believe it or not, the last 9 years of shows, they are uploaded on that website. So
well,
you'll be able
thank
to
thank you
to
for working
search.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah,
getting
you'll
that
be able
done,
to search by your favorite guest or even by topic.
Right, and I know that sometimes it's difficult to get it all done, so I do appreciate you getting it done. So for listeners who are tuning in today, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a very fun, unscripted, quite informative, and very educational show at times. We sit here every Monday for an hour. It's not for free, like Paul reminded me this morning. We have some wonderful sponsors who sponsors our airtime so we can keep community radio alive. And Ellen and I meet with people from all over the world, all over the community, and we're blessed to have people just come in the studio at times and sit with us and enjoy this hour. So today is no different. We have an action-packed show today with one of our ongoing friends and sponsors, and it's the Hospice of St. Francis. And our friend Dottie Allen is here, and she is the Chief Philanthropist Officer at Hospice of St. Francis. And I probably
yes, I am.
It. Yeah. So tell our listeners, what's your title again?
It's Chief Philanthropy Officer. What that
Chief
really means
Philanthropy
is
Philanthropy Officer.
I'm the money chick.
She's the money gal. She's the one that needs everybody to help support Hospice of St. Francis by sending in a little donation, if you can, so that we can keep things running.
Or a big one.
Yes. Yes. And I invited a friend of mine to come in today. My friend Katie Fillion is here. She is a physician, an infectious disease physician. And we're here to talk about, I brought her in today to talk about the coronavirus, because I've had so many people that sent me messages that we should do a show about the coronavirus and what's happening in our world with China. Should we stay home? Should we wash our hands? Should we wear masks? People are talking about canceling their cruises, canceling their trips. And I thought, who do I know that can come in and talk to our listeners about the coronavirus? And then I remembered my good friend Katie that I met at Rutledge Gardens one day. And we had chatted for a little bit, and I had it written down here.
Here in Brevard County, I worked at Comprehensive Healthcare doing HIV medicine, though I'm currently taking some time off to work with homeschool one of my children. Prior to that, I was an infectious disease fellow at Brown University.
And Rhode Island Hospital.
And Rhode Island Hospital, yes. Up in Providence. Yes.
Right. So I racked my brains a little bit, and I said, well, who do I know that would come in at the drop of a hat to chat a little bit with us? And I said, Katie. So thank you. It's Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and our listeners really, really appreciate it. So Paul was just asking a question about the cruise, right? And I'm sure people are asking you as well, because infectious disease doctors get asked all the time about stuff with MRSA and stuff with what's going on with infection around a site or whatever. IVs, I know. As a nurse, I see that a lot. So tell our listeners, bring us up to date on what's happening, if you can, about the coronavirus.
So right before I came, I was up, reviewing the CDC and the WHO websites, as well as the Florida Department of Health. and I'm sure that I'm already out of date. The thing that's important to know, this is a rapidly changing landscape. New infections are popping up all over the place all the time. You know, just yesterday we had two new cases in Florida, two cases in Rhode Island, and, you know, the first deaths in the United States. So keeping up with this virus is really, really hard to do and to stay on top of it. But the important thing to remember right now is that panic isn't going to help anybody. You know, staying calm and knowing your enemy, knowing what you're up against is really, really important. So a couple things to be aware of is this virus spreads just like the, you know, basic common cold, and initial symptoms are like the common cold, and that's why it's going to be so difficult to contain. People who have such mild symptoms aren't going to really trigger any additional quarantine or other extreme measures.
Yeah, because what if you're on an aircraft flying somewhere and someone has bad allergies, you know, and then somebody's, oh, I don't want to sit tonight next to that person because that person may have the coronavirus or maybe influenza, the flu or something. So what do we do? They're telling us at work to wash our hands, wash. People think they can wear a mask and protect themselves, but I don't think the masks are needed.
No, not at all. There's a couple different ways of transmission. One is airborne transmission. That's things like tuberculosis, where it lingers in the air in a room for, you know, hours and hours and hours after someone walks out, as opposed to respiratory, which is larger droplets, and it's when you cough or sneeze in about a 3-foot radius surrounding you, those droplets are going to be on surfaces. So the big thing is keeping your hands clean, keeping surfaces clean, so wiping things down. Normal soap and water is fine. You know, a Clorox wipe is fine as well. Ammonia, bleach, all of these things have, alcohol, all those things have been shown to clean those surfaces.
I almost wish I had invested in the Lysol stocks because, you know, they're going to be selling a lot of Lysol wipes and Clorox wipes.
Absolutely. My husband went this morning to go. We're traveling this week and for spring break, and he went to go get some hand sanitizer and some wipes to wipe down the surfaces on the airplane when we sit down. And multiple stores in our area are actually all sold out. You had to go to 3 stores to get it. So, that, like I said, don't panic. Don't go buy up all the hand sanitizer, because if your friends and neighbors don't have it, they're going to spread the disease and they'll eventually give it to you. So,
This morning it was saying just plain old bleach. Mix a little bleach. Like, I guess there's a way you can mix the bleach with the water. One pot of bleach, X amount of water.
Yeah.
And like put it in like a Windex bottle or something and spritz.
Yep. That works just fine. If you want to make your own alcohol hand sanitizer, there's plenty of recipes online. It's basically aloe vera gel and alcohol plus whatever scented essential oils you think make it smell good. But it's basically the aloe gel and the hand and rubbing alcohol. So you can make your own, but good old soap and water. The other thing is not touching your face, because it's not, you're not inhaling it. It's you're touching a surface that's contaminated with it and then touching your eyes, nose, mouth. So avoiding touching your face when you're out and frequent hand washing is what we're going to be able to do to help prevent this disease from spreading.
So for our listeners who are just tuning in, we're chatting with Katie Fillion, Dr. Katie Fillion. She's an infectious disease specialist, and she's here chatting with us about the coronavirus. So, you know, we all go to the gym, right? And we're all touching the handlebars while we walk. And a lot of gyms have they provide wipes so that you could wipe the machines down. But a lot of people weren't doing that before. This morning, though, I noticed a lot of people were doing that. They can get it from the bars, right, if you touch it?
In theory, if someone, you know, sneezes on their hand or wipes their nose with their hand and then touches that bar, and then you touch that bar after them, you definitely could get it. So two things, wipe the bar before you use it, and don't touch your face while you're at the gym, and wash your hands when you're done.
Right. And so who is at risk, most at risk for this illness?
So they have some preliminary data, and they always talk about the elderly and those with chronic diseases. I did pull up a little bit of the data out of China. So for those that are 80 years old and older, they're saying that the mortality rate with this illness was about 14.8%. Now, that's really high. When you look at kids less than 10 years old, zero. They're not dying of it. So, and where that, they are catching it. They're just not, it's not fatal for the younger kids.
So people who have underlying diseases like diabetes, There's the people with diabetes and high blood pressure at increased risk.
And heart disease,
and
yes.
And they're suggesting that men is at greater risk?
Yeah.
Why men?
I'm not precisely sure why men, but definitely men were at a higher risk.
So fellas, stay home.
And wash your hands.
And wash your hands, yes.
I think that might be the key there.
Because they don't wash their hands. We should watch them when they come out of the bathrooms. A lot of men don't wash their hands.
And I mean, age-wise, the risk doesn't really start to increase until too much until you're up into your 60s and 70s. Other things is immunocompromised people. So if you have an autoimmune disease, I'm an HIV doctor. If you have HIV or AIDS, cancer. If you're on cancer treatment, or lots of people with autoimmune diseases are on immune suppressant medications. Organ transplant patients, all those folks are going to be at increased risk. And then those with chronic respiratory conditions. So I personally have asthma, and I told my husband, I said, if one of these kids comes down with it, you're taking care of them, not me, because I'm at much higher risk of getting severe illness.
I'm really surprised that there's no antiviral treatment recommended for this. Like when you have the flu, you can take Tamiflu, right? Or an antibiotic, but there's nothing for coronavirus?
At the moment, there's not. So typical coronaviruses. I guarantee every single person listening has had a coronavirus in their lifetime. We only hear about things like SARS and MERS. Those are also coronaviruses, but the typical coronavirus causes your common cold. Occasionally, you get one that a new version of the coronavirus that mutates and causes more severe illness, which is the case what we're experiencing now. But there are probably antivirals out there that are effective, and they're currently testing them. There's a Tamiflu-like medication that's a newer version that they're testing. And I've seen a few reports of them using some of the older HIV drugs, which are antivirals, to try to prevent it. It's just they don't want to go out and start reporting on stuff to have it be false later. So it's not that they're withholding information. It's just they don't feel confident that they have accurate information that they're ready to share yet.
And the sad thing is when they do find a cure for it, it might be coming out of China.
It probably will be, actually.
The drugs are probably going to be coming from China. So I wonder how the public is going to feel about that.
I'm sure that will make people distrustful and nervous.
It will. So for our friends who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Katie Fillion.
Fillion,
like million.
Yep.
Right. And so we're talking about the coronavirus because everyone is talking about it. Every news channel, every radio show, people on their jobs, people with their children, people are calling in sick. I'm sure some people will take advantage of it too and call in sick. If they have a fever or a flu or something, they'll say, I'm sick and stay home. But now they're recommending that if you have a fever, if you're sniffling, if you're coughing, especially productive cough, stay home.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense at this point.
But, in healthcare, I've seen people at work who were sick. Because we can't afford to stay home anymore.
We've all gone to work sick.
Yes. So, Katie, how does one protect themselves? I mean, other than washing hands, what else can we do? What do we tell our children when they come home and they say, well, the schools are preparing by cleaning our desks, the rails, the toilets, the tables? What else can we be doing to calm people's nerves?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, you have to just, to some extent, trust the information that's coming out. Get your news from reliable sources. Don't buy into conspiracy theories. I mean, the World Health Organization and the CDC, they're putting out information, albeit it's coming out very slowly. I've actually read a few articles on the New York Times. They have some great pieces on this that are very, they illustrate a lot of what's going on, and that's really, really good. If you get sick, stay home. Lots of hand washing. I think that's the main thing. Lots of people are asking about travel and essential travel. Basically, if a country has, rates that are greater than where you live, don't go there. Stay home.
Because you might not be able to come home, because this morning they were talking about all the people
absolutely.
Who were at a military base, like for 14 days or something.
Right.
And they're quarantined there, and they can't come home.
Absolutely. So quarantine has a couple of different levels. There's multiple levels of quarantine. One is, you are confined at customs and you are not allowed to proceed past customs. That's not really happening a whole lot. More what's happening is, you're coming back from a place and you're a person under surveillance, whether that's, home surveillance or the public health officials calling you on a daily basis, checking in, you're monitoring your own fevers, A lot of it is just like self-isolation is what's happening, as opposed to like institutional quarantining.
Well, self-isolation is good if it's not associated with the coronavirus, because if you're home with a refrigerator full of food, you have Wi-Fi, you have air conditioning, that's kind of a nice kind of way to stay home.
So like a little mini vacation.
It's like a mini, yeah, you could relax. But so when somebody says that a patient is cured, what do they mean?
I mean, it means they've recovered from the illness. I think at this point, we haven't done studies on, or not that I've seen any data on viral shedding, when the shedding begins and when the shedding ends. But typically, since it's transmitted through respiratory means, it's when you're coughing. So it's that active cough that's spreading the disease. So it's thought that if you're not coughing, you're not going to be spreading that disease.
So there's no end in sight for this coronavirus? The way we just had, 2 more cases in New York. They've had some cases in Los Angeles. It's here in Florida.
2 cases yesterday in Florida. One was associated with travel to Italy. The other doesn't have a known contact with foreign travel. And what a lot of people are beginning to say, and a lot of the experts are saying, that we are starting to see a couple of cases in the United States with no known link to travel, meaning that someone traveled, gave it to someone else. Their symptoms were very mild, and then a third, fourth, fifth person picked it up, and that's the one that we're picking up. So I'm very confident we're going to see a lot more cases before this thing slows down.
Do you think the United States is prepared? I mean, because I don't know how you could prepare for a disease. I mean, when we had the Ebola outbreak, everybody was going crazy, and then it kind of died down for a little bit. Then we had SARS, right? We had that, and that kind of died. And now this is it. But this is not just affecting our health. It's affecting the stock market. Mm-hmm. It's affecting people's retirement. I mean, people are worried about it. And so many people put their money into a 401k at work, and they never paid any attention. They never logged on to even check and see where their money was going. And now all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, this is affecting not just our health. I mean, how do we mobilize and get people to respond accordingly so that, A, number one, we're not worried as much, and B, I see Dottie's raising her hand. Go for it. Jump right in. You're shaking your head to everything that Dr. Katie Filion is saying.
In the past couple of days, I've had 2 people say to me, this is not a big deal. Pretty soon, it's going to be warm. It's going to be like everything else. The flu goes away. And so all we have to do is ride it out until the temperature comes up a little bit. And it seems to me that that's pretty short-sighted. I don't know if you had a thought on it.
So I think that there will probably be a seasonal component to it, but I really think that over the next few weeks and months, it's going to likely increase and have more cases. I mean, I've seen some experts predicting that 70% will eventually be affected. But as far as comparing this to something like Ebola or SARS, those are epidemics that we've experienced in the recent past. But this one is really different in a lot of ways. If I were going to compare this to something that is in the knowledge of our recent past, the most similar thing would probably be swine flu. It's the rate of infection from person to person is more similar. It's estimated that a typical flu infects about 1.5 to 2 people per person that get it. You infect 1.5 to 2 people on average. Whereas this is, they're looking at about 2 people, so it's about the same. Currently, the mortality rate, Kamal, I know we talked about if you're older or younger, it's different or you have other infections. But on average, just all comers, it's hovering around 2%. But remember, they're only testing the sickest cases. As we test more not sick people, that's going to come down even further. Swine flu, the mortality rate for that was around 0.2%. So it's significantly lower than what we're dealing with now. But again, it's probably going to be cut in half or less, right. I would suspect.
And a lot of people are walking around who are carrying, who probably have it, but they have no symptoms.
Right, absolutely. And now another thing that we have to think about is, what happened to swine flu? Did it go away? No, it's still there. It's still... part of your flu vaccine every year contains the swine flu vaccination. It's the regular flu vaccine plus the swine flu vaccine. People are like, it's just kind of mixed into the general milieu of winter respiratory illnesses, and it's just part of the new normal. I suspect that that that's probably where this is going to lead. We're going to see the mortality rate come down. We're going to, you know, take good precautions with hand washing, and it's just going to be another nasty bug that we live with every day.
Well, we're grateful for infectious disease doctors such as yourself that could calm our fears and our nerves, because I know for a fact, I said to my children, be careful of crowds. Because, you know, when you go in crowds and it's small spaces and you don't know who's got what, I mean, you have to be careful. So I think it's good that, you know, you and others like you are helping us, the general public, and telling us in lay terms what we need to do so that people don't panic about the economy and the healthcare and their jobs and what could be happening. So thank you, Katie Fillion, for coming on our show. Fillion, just like Million. So now we have Dottie. We're going to start off with Dottie Allen, who is here with Hospice of St. Francis. And we've had Hospice of St. Francis so many times on our show talking about how they uplift lives, uplift each other and all of us in the community, and helps us to decide when the time comes which hospice to choose. So Dottie, thank you for coming. We appreciate the love and compassion that you and so many of our friends from Hospice of St. Francis share, not just here in Brevard, but all the way, you guys are now all the way down south as well. So tell our listeners again what you do at Hospice of St. Francis, and I know you're excited about a lot of stuff that's happening.
Yes. Well, I am the Chief Philanthropy Officer, otherwise self-known as the Money Chick, but... I'm responsible for all of the philanthropic support, the financial support that we have from the community. And we're really very, very fortunate in the fact that the community knows who we are, they prefer us, they support us, and in some cases they give us the ultimate gift, which is the gift of time, and they become volunteers. Hospice of St. Francis... It back in the day was thought about as a Titusville hospice program, but we really have branched out, and as you say, we are from Mims to Mico. We do the whole 75 miles of the county, and probably have more patients at this point in Mid to South County than we do in Titusville.
Yeah, I had to tell somebody yesterday that you guys have branched out, that you're not only in Titusville anymore.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, that's why we love when you come on our show and we're able to spread that message as well.
Yes.
Because people need to know that you guys are so dedicated to us here in Brevard and elsewhere as well. So you have an event coming up in, I think it's April 2nd, and that's one of your signature events because you've done it, what, a few years now?
This will be the fourth.
Right. So tell our listeners about the Purple Iris and how they can get a ticket to attend, and what happens with all, the money that you collect at that event, the funds go towards helping people and so many programs that you all are doing at Hospice of St. Francis.
This is the fourth year of the Purple Iris. It's a luncheon. It's a signature event, as you say, Sita. It's held at Rockledge Country Club. And we usually have 100 to 150 women, mostly women. My husband comes every year because he has to. Joe Killian, the president of Hospice of St. Francis, is there. And there are a few other men, but for the most part, it's women. It's kind of a combination of a couple of things. First of all, we raise funds to support programs. So this last year, we were raising funds to support our North Star for Grieving Children program. And this year, we're going to be raising money for our We Honor Veterans program, which is a special program for all of our veteran patients, of which we probably have 450 in any given year, and that's a growing number. But we also work with veterans organizations all over Brevard to make sure that the kinds of services that we have take into consideration the special needs of veterans. So anybody who's interested in attending, you can go to... the purpleiris2020.com. It's an Eventbrite website. Also, you can call our office at 321-360-3456.
On the Facebook page, too.
Our Facebook page as well. Yes.
Yeah, well, I put in for a day off for that day because I like supporting Hospice of St. Francis. And I like, you know, all the services that you all offer, the comfort levels, advanced directives, you know, sitting with the patients, nursing care, ancillary supplies. You have such a great team of the chaplain, the physician, washing, dressing, grooming, taking care of the pets, the children. You offer awesome things for someone at the end of life who need that comfort care.
We like to think about the work that we do as really holistic. Yes, we have a patient, and the patient is the driving force. We do a care plan around what the patient really wants and needs. But the patient doesn't live in a vacuum. Oftentimes, the patient has kids and grandkids and a whole or friends, a whole circle around them. And yes, the pets sometimes are probably even more important than the people to some of our patients. So we look at everything, and we try to provide some way to support and help every aspect of the patient's life. I think that makes us pretty special.
It does, because your values does reflect what you say and what you do by your actions. And that's what, I mean, I've had a lot of our patients at the nursing homes in the various nursing facilities I've worked in that had Hospice of St. Francis. And people like the idea that you're more focused on patient care, not money, which some hospices, I personally feel that way sometimes. Like, you have to bring the people back and say, wait a minute, this is about comfort care at end of life. Let's deal with that first. And then financially, we'll deal with that other part.
Well, there is really something to be said for being not-for-profit. Not-for-profit doesn't mean that you're not supposed to make a profit. But what it does mean is that whatever you do make, that you put it right back into the organization, into the mission. It doesn't go into the pockets of shareholders or owners. And so the better we are, the better work that we do, and the more philanthropic donations that we receive, the more we can grow the programs that we have and offer even more free advantages for the patient and the family.
Yeah, and it's more like Hospice of St. Francis, what you all do. It's not a job. It's more like a responsibility. And I think my friends who work for Hospice of St. Francis, it's to them, it's a privilege to be able to take care of the patients, their families, and that circle. I see that all the time.
There is, I like to almost think of it as a calling. You know, a lot of the people that work for us are working there because they are called to do it, to have like a servant mentality, to help people. And it's really wonderful to see that.
Yeah. Now, Ellen, you're going to put that on the website for the Purple Iris.
I have it.
Right?
I have it up already. And the Eventbrite tickets are listed right there for them.
Right. And so, Paul, do we have... I think Paul's going to, yeah, I think we could take a quick break. And then when we come back, on our second segment, we want to talk a little bit about the Elizabeth Circle. We want to talk about the North Star for Grieving Children. And we want to expand a little bit about the veterans. I've seen the service that you all have done for veterans. And it's amazing because there's so many people that are dying alone, leaving our planet from this earthly vacation that we all call life. And there's no one. And then hospice comes in with a team and sends this person off in such a dedication, you know, this person dedicated their life to us, and they have no one with them, and you all do that with purpose. So it's such a feeling of pride to watch that service.
A funeral service when the patient doesn't have any family.
Yeah, I've seen where they've come into a residence room and do that, and I tear up. Because you do feel such a sense of pride when you see the flag being draped, and you know it is. So we want to talk a little bit about that. So we'll come back. We'll be right back.
Sita and Friends, right after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors: Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begay on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. My co-host Ellen Little and I are here in studio with two fabulous guests. We have our friend Dr. Katie Fillion, who's an MD, and she's here. She's sitting with us chatting about infectious diseases. We just chatted a little bit with her about the coronavirus. And then our second segment, we started off with our friend Dottie Allen, who's here, the chief philanthropic
philanthropy officer.
Say it, Ellen.
Philanthropy.
That's a Trinidad thing, you know?
Exactly. It's just the syllables are off.
It is. And we're here talking about Hospice of St. Francis and all the wonderful things that they offer to patients in the time of need, patients or people in their time of need, human beings on this planet that deserves comfort at the end of life, to live, to die pain-free. That's the catch, right? We all want to leave without being in pain. Mm-hmm. And so Katie was going to jump in here and chat a little bit because you had a family member that just passed away and was under Hospice of St. Francis?
Yes, my grandmother died last January, so just over a year ago, of dementia, and it was a very slow process. Even her physician said she declined very, very slowly. So she ended up being on having hospice services in her own home for more than a year by the time all was said and done. And like one thing that from the physician standpoint and as the family advocate in this particular case, I was telling my grandfather and my mother, people underutilize hospice services. You know, if you're eligible if you have 6 to 12 months life expectancy, or that's what I've been told. I may be wrong, but
6 months.
6 months, yeah. And if that's what's expected, then get the services. It's not going to hurt anything, and it's only likely to help. And
it's an extension of hands.
Yeah,
to care for someone.
Yeah,
that's what
I mean,
it is.
My grandfather was trying to dress her, bathe her, feed her, all independently, and we'd hired some a nursing assistant to come in and do some of those things for her. But he was determined to keep her at home and do all of these things for her at home. And it was really nice to have hospice there to help support him and help support my mother and I, as we were saying, you need more help. Please let these people come in. And they provided those additional services.
Well, I think they come in and they create a plan, a care-based plan, which is physical, emotional, and spiritual needs for the patient. And I see Dottie's shaking her head. So take it from there. I mean, you coordinate the care for the patient as well as the family.
Well, think about it this way. There is an interdisciplinary need to address the patient's situation. So we have a team. There are doctors, registered nurses, LPNs, hospice aides, which are called certified nursing assistants, social workers, chaplains, specially trained volunteers, and there's probably another one that I'm missing. But all of these people are part of the team. So as you said, Sita, a plan is created. But the plan is evaluated by that team. They sit together once a week. Every week, and as a team, they look at every patient, and they look at what's changing, what needs to be modified. Everybody around that table has an equal voice, which is important because in some settings, those with the higher levels are the ones who set the tone, and the others are the ones who just deliver the service. So if a hospice aide notices something during a visit, then the hospice aide will say, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, but let me tell you what just happened, and that could modify the plan. I think in acute care settings, would you agree, Katie, that There's a lot more of this collaboration that's happening these days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I know when I was, you know, in working in the hospital in the inpatient setting, we would recommend hospice services. And even in the outpatient setting for HIV care, I frequently recommended these hospice services when it was appropriate. And people have always had excellent outcomes with it, and a much happier end-of-life experience.
Yeah. I think the key thing for listeners to understand is that hospice is not about dying. Hospice is about living the very best that you possibly can for whatever it is that you have in terms of time. So if we can lift up the situation and make the patient feel more comfortable and have the communication between patient and family be more open and more honest, then everybody feels better. And sometimes it helps a person live longer.
Yeah, and it makes a difference that Hospice of St. Francis is the longest serving and the only independent non-for-profit hospice. And you all have been around in Brevard since 1977. And that is a common feeling in itself, knowing this, that how much you all have given back to the community. And so when people think about philanthropy and they think about a foundation, they think about donating, and they think about what's happening with the contribution that are received. So tell our listeners a little bit about what happens when they donate large sums or small sums or mediocre sums or anything they've got that they can give to the foundation.
If a person gives an unrestricted gift, a general gift to be used where the need is greatest, that gives us ultimate flexibility. All of our programs benefit from philanthropic support. The hospice benefit is paid for by Medicare and private insurances, but all of the other services that we provide, such as our bereavement program, which deals with families for at least a year after the loss, our North Star for Grieving Children program, our Veterans program, our Pet Pledge program, which finds homes for the pets of our patients when they can't care for them anymore, all of those are free. So if we have donations that come in that are not designated to a particular program, we can use them to help support the staff and the activities of those free programs. If someone wants to designate their money, however, for a particular program, then we always make sure that those dollars go to that program, and they can be for buying special books and games or equipment.
Everybody wants a wheelchair and a walker and a commode and an electric bed. Now you know what's cool is I see that hospice also, at times, if they can afford it, man, those Hoyer lifts and those mechanical lifts, they can save so many people from going into a facility. Because if you can lift somebody in and out of bed, it's such a break for the families and the caregivers.
Well, the Medicare program covers durable medical equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's automatically a way to have that taken care of. But what do you do when you have a patient who has no insurance? Maybe it's a homeless patient who happens to come to hospice that doesn't have anything. We still provide everything, including the durable medical equipment. So donations give us a way to make that possible.
Yeah. So, Katie, have you heard about the North Star program for grieving children?
I actually did. I have two children, and when my grandmother died, we actually lived down the street from them, so we visited very, very regularly. So they were integral in this, and were very much affected by the loss of my grandmother. And we were aware of the program at the time, and we did have a few conversations with hospice about how to handle the children's grieving. And at the time, my oldest daughter was already seeing a psychologist for some therapy, so we worked it in with that.
Yeah.
And my youngest was young enough that she was kind of, okay, whatever.
And we all know that people grieve differently, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people want to be left alone. Some want to cry and bawl. Like, if you ever went to an Indian funeral, they like to cry. They let it out. And some people just withdraw. I mean, Dottie, have you seen like the various levels, how people grieve? Because, and you all also, you don't have to be a Hospice of St. Francis patient in order to attend one of these events either.
That's true. That's true. Right. It's open to anybody in the public, anybody in the county who is in a grieving situation. In fact, I'd also add that we do a lot of work with the public school system. So that if there is a tragedy, an accident, or suicide, or whatever, it's our social workers, our specially trained social workers and grief counselors that go in and help the teachers, but also help the students.
Yeah.
But the point that you make about
grieving
is really important. I tell a story. It's kind of a story that I've made up on my own, but it's a composite of a number of different stories that I'm familiar with. But in this one, the husband dies of pancreatic cancer, and his wife now is faced with the fact that she's grieving. He was 42 in this story. She was 42. So she's grieving, and she has three kids. She's got a 5-year-old who doesn't understand the finality of death and is saying, when is daddy coming home? When is daddy coming home? She's got an 11-year-old who has decided not to talk anymore. That's the way that he's going to deal with his grief. He's totally silent. And then she's got a 15-year-old who's so angry that she's afraid he's either going to kill himself or kill somebody else. So she got three different ages of children grieving in different ways, plus her own grief to deal with, plus having to go out and get a job now. So just imagine, so we come in and we can really help with kids at the little age level and then at the middle and then teens. And when the kids get together in a group, up until that point, each one of them feels as though they're the only ones who feel this way. When they get into the group of their peers and they realize that there are other kids who are going through similar things, it really helps to soften the acuity of the way that they feel, and they can heal, they can get better.
Right. And you know, I've seen where some people feel guilty when they put somebody on hospice. How do we help fellow human beings not to feel guilty? Because living and dying, it's part of life, right? But it's also cultural. It can be very, very cultural. Some families don't talk about death and the dying process at all. And some families, like my family, we were taught we're all born to die. And we had, you know, a Hindu picture in our home that showed the various stages of man. And it says, once a man, twice a child. And it showed you the various stages of the gentleman as a child, as a teenager, as a family man, as an older man, and then bent down into the earth. But a lot of families don't talk about that. What do you do when you come across a family that culturally no one has actually sat down with them and explained to them the death and dying process?
Our team tries to deal with the patient. As I said earlier, the patient drives the process. So if the patient wants one thing and the family wants something else, we go with what the patient wants. So we try to talk to the patient about being open with family members. Sometimes it works, and sometimes culturally, as you say, it doesn't work.
I know Ellen was talking about the Irish funeral once. And how they do that.
Yeah.
And they have the children there, and everybody's there.
And a lot of times I remember going to family homes, and we had the open casket actually at the house. So, and it was a big, you know, from what I remember, it was a big party. You know, everybody was drinking and celebrating.
A lot of Jamesons.
Yes. A lot of Jameson whiskey. Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, yes. But going, you know, we've had shows, the hospice of, that always amazed me. That of the cultural differences and the fact that the counselors were so in tune to so many different cultures and heritages, yeah, and so forth. But, you know, it all starts with that 5 wishes. So it really, anybody who hasn't really figured out what they're going to do, and it's a tough conversation, but Hospice of St. Francis really talks you through it.
Or
it makes
even
it an easier conversation, because then you realize that you're really going to get what you want.
Right. Right.
And your family's going to get what you want, and it takes the burden.
The thing that's also really hard is if you don't know, like I always found it was hardest when you don't know what that person wanted, or you couldn't ask them. My grandmother, you know, she was hallucinating about cows in the neighbor's yard and telling my kids stories, all these things about these cows were doing long before she was needing hospice services. You couldn't ask her anything. And my kids love those stories and think it's awesome. And I'm glad they have that memory of her.
Well, you know, even like the DNR, a lot of people don't even talk about that. They don't want that. But I find, I mean, being a nurse and watching it play out on a daily basis, mm-hmm. The sad thing is a lot of families use the ICU waiting room as their own living room when they have to discuss these things. But it should be discussed. You know, don't be afraid at Thanksgiving or Christmas. Bring up the conversation. I see Dottie shaking her head. Why are people not bringing up these conversations so that we know what to do when that time comes?
I think that part of it is generational. Ellen mentioned the five wishes. We actually have a brochure, a little booklet, that lists a way for you to fill it out and put the five things that are most important to you when you die, as you're dying. My husband, for example, when he filled his out, he said he wanted to have the Rolling Stones playing at the time of his death to sort of help him cross over to the rock and roll world
of wherever he knows Richard is still going to be here.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly right. But I think that it may be generational. I know that my mother didn't want to talk about it when she was dying because she was afraid that the family would think that she had given up. The family didn't want to talk about it because they were afraid she would think that they had given up.
Yes.
But the baby boomer generation, and then the younger generations too, but in particular the baby boomer generation, is going to change all that.
A lot of misconceptions. That's why communication is so important, you know? But I know it's... For me, I mean, we have our DNR in place. And like you say, I want to have some curry chicken and rice and a salad and a baked salmon at my time, when my time comes. And I want to make sure there's some curried potatoes for my vegetarian friends. I've added that onto my list of things
for my
celebration
part of
life.
So we have all of this on tape now.
Yes. No, I mean, yes.
I wanted my ashes to go up in fireworks. Right. That was my plan.
Well, you know, people ask me sometimes, how come you're always so positive? And I say to them, every day you wake up and you open your two eyes and you could move your legs and you could move your arms and you could smell and you could think and you could breathe is a good day. And when that point comes that you could no longer do those things, then, you know, you make your peace with the good Lord because he's going to take you home, wherever home is, right? But people, I think we take this... Like the lady last week was telling us, we take breathing for granted. We take walking for granted. We take talking for granted. These are all gifts, if you ask me. I see you're shaking your head.
I totally agree.
Aren't they? It's like the most beautiful gift ever to be able to call your friend and say something or teach your children something when they're doing homework or ask them, what would you like for dinner? It's a collaboration. It's like we're doing what we're supposed to do while we're alive. Mm. And then there's something in place like Hospice of St. Francis for when that time comes. So we were going to talk a little bit about the veterans. And yeah, it's sad when you see people who have served this country so that we could enjoy the freedoms that we have and they have no one. And then Hospice of St. Francis jumps in and does whatever they can do to help them.
Well, there are more veterans in Brevard County than anywhere else in the country per capita. And I think it probably is because, number one, it's a really warm climate to retire to. But we've had Patrick Air Force Base and the Naval Air Station and a lot of other military things happen in this area. But we happen to have more veterans here. And so part of what we're doing is trying to develop programs that will honor their service and make them feel special, especially if they're our patients. So we have probably about 450 veterans right now on our service in any given year, let's say, that are hospice patients. In addition to that, we have our palliative care, our Pathways program, which I'm sure has more. But we've done some special things with these people. We've offered them a pinning ceremony in which a specially trained veteran volunteer goes in and talks to the patient and records their story. And then there's a group that comes back. They give the veteran a cap from his or her branch of service, and a quilt, handmade quilt made by one of our volunteers, and a flag, and
so you honor them.
Yes, and we also give them a pin. So it's a ceremony, and they also at the same time tell the veteran's story.
Yeah.
So sometimes the family never knew because the veteran just never really talked about it.
Or sometimes the family was so busy they never asked. I've had so many patients at the 5 or 6 nursing homes I've worked in for the last 30 years that have told stories at the end of life that their families shake their heads and say, I never knew that. Well, I'm a chatterbox. I ask questions and
no.
They tell me stuff. They do. I mean, they tell me all this cool stuff, and the daughters and the sons were like, she never told me that. And I said, well, did you ever ask?
Well, let me tell you about one of the really exciting things that we started this year. Maybe some of your listeners are familiar with Honor Flight, which is a plane that takes veterans to Washington and takes them to all the memorials and the monuments. It's a really, really wonderful service, and it makes them feel as though they're connected and honored in a special way. We had patients who couldn't get out because they were too sick to do the Honor Flight. So we worked with an organization to create these virtual reality programs that go into goggles.
Yeah.
And we also worked with the Honor Flight program, and we've created Honor Flight on a program so that the patient in the bed can pop the goggles on
and experience
and actually,
that.
Yeah. As if he or she was actually right there in Washington going to the memorials.
That's
they
wonderful.
Love it.
And you also have the Elizabeth Circle. That's kind of something new that you all just started?
We launched it last May. What we were thinking, actually this is modeled on women's giving circles that are prevalent in across the country. United Way has a lot of them, and other charities do as well. But it's where women come together around the mission of the organization, and they pay dues. So the dues are $250 a year or $1,000 a year if you want to be an angel at the angel level. But we take all of the dues and we put it into a pot, and then at a later time during the year, we bring the women in the group together and say, how do you want to apportion this pot of money? So the last year was the first year, so we made the decision that the money would go to the North Star for Grieving Children program. So we raised $8,800, and at the event on April 2nd, there'll be a check passing where the Elizabeth Circle will give the $8,800 to Hospice of St. Francis. Right. For the North Star program.
Yeah, it's just a one more arm of what you are doing, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
So, Dottie, tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends one more time about the event coming up on April 2nd, and then you have something later on during the year as well. So at least they can put it on their calendars.
Yeah, we do, and I'm going to ask Ellen to give you the website because I think she's got it up on her thing.
HospiceofStFrancis.com. And that's St. Francis is spelled F-R-A-N-C-I-S, not E-S, just in case you needed that. There's a great calendar of events that's right on there, as well as the services and the About page.
Yeah, it was very easy to buy my ticket. I just went up in like 5 minutes, I did it.
Also, the tickets themselves you can get from Eventbrite. I have it on here. It is the Purple Iris 2020. So you just log into Eventbrite, eventbrite.com. And /purple-iris-2020.
Right. And our listeners who are tuning in to Sita and Friends today, you know, you're not in this alone when you need hospice care. You know, they help you. They sit down with you and guide you about the Pathways program. They guide you about the North Star program for children. If you need medication and equipment, if you have needs, financial needs, insurance. I know you all help people a lot navigating through the process because a lot of people don't understand what Medicare picks up, what Medicaid picks up, what private insurance, and you have people in place to sit with families and talk about that. You have a care plan, or you meet with them. Give us a a guideline of what happens when somebody picks up that phone and calls Hospice of St. Francis? Because Paul said we have, what, 3 more minutes? Yeah, like what happens? Let's say someone is tuning in right now and they said, I can use the services. Lead us from there.
If you, if the person has been certified by their physician for needing hospice services, because that's one of the things that you had mentioned earlier to me, Sita, that if somebody, I'm just trying to think about what I was going to say. I lost my thought.
That's okay.
But that if somebody needs our services, that they have to be certified by the physician for being hospice eligible, and that generally means that the person will die within...
No, I think Katie said that.
About 6 months.
6 months a year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. About 6 months.
But there's also, like, volunteer training classes and so forth.
Oh, sure.
And even those are pretty, you know, and they're free, right? They're free,
yes,
for people to go,
yep,
to?
Caregiver classes.
Even caregiver classes.
We have that.
So if you're dealing with that at home that you need help with, those are great.
So usually when you call and someone, you make that phone call, initiate the contact.
Yes.
I know that hospice will send a nurse out or someone to do an admission. If it's a facility, they come out and do an admission.
Yes.
They do the financial part of it. And then they'll tell you what's going to happen. It's not like they're going to leave you hanging.
Right.
They tell you what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. They tell you about the services, what they can provide, and things like that.
That process, the admissions process, is really very intensive. Sometimes it can be several hours.
It is. I've seen a nurse like 4 to 5 hours sometimes, but it's thorough.
It's thorough.
Right. And at that point, they make a decision as well with the physician and the team if a person should be on certain medications, because there's so much interactions and nobody's checking.
That's right. So if a person is hospice eligible, the admissions process is the first step, and they will go through all of that information.
Right. And the Pathways program, if somebody's on that program, then that would lead into the hospice program when they need it for end of life and comfort care.
Pathways is a really interesting program because it's not for hospice patients necessarily. It's for people that are suffering with the side effects and complications of chronic illness. And what they need is a consultation. They need somebody to come in and say, okay, let's look at the situation, we'll look at your symptoms, we'll look at your medications, and then help that person's doctor modify the plan
so that the
person's more comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think Ellen have a 20-second advertisement.
I do, for the Space Coast Progressive Alliance. They have a Healthcare Decisions 2020 on Thursday, March 5th at 6:30 p.m. They're going to talk about infant mortality, insurance, Medicaid, Medicare, prescription drugs, and rising costs. It is free and open to the public, and that's going to be down at the Front Street Civic Center, 2205 Front Street in Melbourne, Florida.
I feel like this hour went by too fast.
It always goes by too fast. But thank you, all of our guests, and thank you, all of our listeners, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Dr. Katie Fillion and Dottie, I almost called you Doctor, Dr. Donnie Allen. Thank you so
it's
much for being here with
here.
Us today. We'll make sure that these shows are all posted on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends under CDMediaInc.com. See you next week.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.